Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
Really awesome.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Oh, awesome. That's
awesome.
With Stephen Bradford. Stephen B.
Bradford A. What's
going
up?
On? Hey, dude.
What up, dude?
Oh, it's a good day. You know what I worked today?
What?
I worked today.
Yeah, you're working today, dude. It's amazing.
I know. I wore.
We got to sit together. We wore some suits.
It was really. It would fit me really well. Like, remember back in the day, I didn't wear clothes that fit me. Perrier just went all over.
I just spit all over the mic. Yeah. Yeah. No, I remember you didn't really dress well at all.
Yeah.
They're dressing you nice.
I'm all grown up.
Yeah, you're grown up.
I'm a grown up boy.
I like it.
Yeah. I'm speaking of grown up boys. We have one with us.
That's weird. That's a weird segue for a very legendary.
No, I'm grown up.
Actor. That's Wally Kurth, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll confess to that.
The most prolific soap actor of our generation.
Dude, what's crazy is, you know, forget Ned. Let's talk about Justin Kiriakis first, because that's when I first met this cat.
Yeah, you met Justin.
I did meet Justin, which is crazy, dude.
What was your character over there?
Harris Michaels. Don't laugh at that name, you bastard.
We need Harris Michaels.
No, we don't. Back. No, you might need him, but not his acting. Because it was really not great at all. It was on days.
Harris Michaels sounds like a guy that would wear just like Lacoste shirts.
Yeah, it wasn't good, dude. It wasn't good. It was such a weird man. When did you start? Hold on. We're going to talk about a lesson, but when did you start Days of Our Lives?
So I started in January of 1987.
Dude, that's right when I got. That's like right. I was the summer of either 87 or 88. So
February I aired. I think I aired February 3rd. It was crazy because we had to. There was a couple. I don't want to get into the process of getting the job, but we had to work. I had to work on a Saturday, which is my first and only Saturday. Whoever works on Saturday, but Deidre Hall was doing that House, that nighttime series,
right?
So they had me come in on a Saturday, and I think my show aired like on Thursday.
Oh wow, that was fast. They weren't months ahead.
They weren't convinced that I was. I had what it took. And I had to. I kid you not. I had to go get a haircut. Shelley Curtis was our producer. And she liked me, and she wanted me to work. So she told me to lose 5 pounds over the weekend.
Sheesh.
So I ate nothing but fruit and ran and jogged
and
for the entire weekend.
And like drank castor oil?
Didn't do that. That might have helped.
No, that's Little Rascals, dude.
Oh, okay.
Went and got a haircut from her at her salon.
Well, how big was your hair in the 80s? That might have helped.
Dude,
the 5
you probably cut 2 pounds off.
Well.
I saw that beautiful hair, bro.
My hair wasn't. It wasn't that 80s look that she wanted because she used to work with Jack and Blackie over here.
Yeah.
So
we
all got that
the mullet.
Look. So that's what she wanted. Yeah, that
she wanted the mullet.
Look.
Yeah,
And then I got the part and
That's 87, dude. That's crazy. I was 17. I was still in high school.
Well, you were
it was
working,
during
though,
the summer break.
But you were working. You were doing. You were just.
I was
beginning.
Out of this world.
Yeah, right.
And then that was kind of a little stint that was supposed to be a couple shows and ended up being a couple months.
Right.
And then, you know, Scott Reeves owes me his whole career because we were friends on the
show. Scott and I have something in common.
That's funny, dude. That's funny. So, because we were friends on the show.
Yeah.
And he was kind of my sidekick. And then I left and they gave all the story to him. And then he owes me his marriage, too.
Yes.
By the way, I'm just going to throw that out there, too. His career and his marriage.
I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
He will not. But anyway, it was fun, man. It was so cool because That's where I met you. I met, you know,
Billy, Steven Nichols.
It was like the day's heyday, man.
Right.
That's when Patch and Kayla were like,
yeah,
they were like Luke and Laura at that time in the 80s.
They were indeed.
They were. It was big.
And Missy Brennan. That's where Missy Brennan met Scott Reeves.
Yeah,
became
Melissa
Mrs.
Reeves.
Reeves.
Yeah, that's right. Right. So how long, what was your first run there like?
It was, so I ran there for 4 years, and you think I would have saved enough money. But I bought a house unwisely. It was at the height of the market, of course.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
And when I left, within 3 or 4 months, I'm like, ooh, I need to get another job. So within 6 months, I started work on here in 91. So I left
in
91, that
is
January
so
of 91.
Crazy.
And I started in August of 91 on General Hospital, and wow, that was a 14-year run.
When did you start? In August?
In August of 91 on GH.
Wow, dude, we start. That's crazy.
And then when did you? So you were like
91.
Yeah.
Parallel lines.
Parallel, man. We didn't know. Wow, that's amazing.
And Gloria cast you, right?
Gloria Monte cast me.
I take that as a little bit of an honor. You know, she was such a legend.
Yeah,
it was pretty cool to say that. Gloria.
Did you have to test?
I did test, but it's so funny. Mark and I were just talking about it upstairs. So Gloria wanted to discover actors.
Oh,
she
yeah.
didn't. She did not want to know that I was on another. Well, Mark thought that she wouldn't want to know that I was just on another show.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
And so I was testing, or I was reading in the producer's office.
So you lost 20 pounds and cut your hair.
Well, here's the thing, though. It was weird because I had left Days, and for some reason I was sort of like anti-Hollywood. And I remember taking a picture that was not good, and Mark said, "Your picture sucked. I'm not even going to show her your picture because she won't even look at you."
Yeah, that's
so he threw
amazing.
The picture away. He took the white out. Remember when they all had white out?
Oh, yeah.
White it out, Days of Our Lives.
Major credit.
Which probably the only credit. Oh, so, right. I mean, then I really was a discovered.
Yeah.
Discovered.
Yeah.
I had, that was it, pretty
okay,
much.
Okay, sure.
That is awesome.
Jane, who was in the
Jane Elliott.
Jane Elliott, before we walked in there, said, "Take off your wedding ring, and whatever you do, do not tell her that we worked together on Days of Our Lives, and especially don't tell her that I played your lover, because I'm going to be your mother on this show." So.
That's funny.
Oh my gosh!
So I had Mark Teshner, Jane Elliott looking out for me.
Wow! Right?
And
wow.
The rest is history.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
And then you did you test with Jane?
So, no, I tested with Cheryl Richardson.
Oh, you did?
And it was a crazy test. In fact, it was weird because I was the only one testing.
Well, that's good.
And
good odds.
And there was,
you would hope.
And the test was like, there was a ladder involved. There was all this, there was a bucket full of paint, but it was water. All this major prop stuff and weird block. I mean, honestly.
That's a lot
for a test, yeah.
For a test. Like, he's like, just standing there. So she wanted to see something. I don't know, but we were like, wow, this is quite a test. I'm going to walk up the ladder, and then I have to do this and this.
Wow.
And you got
But, yeah, I was the only one being tested, so I was a little confident.
Well,
can you imagine?
The problem is,
did I get it? No.
No, you
no,
didn't.
You, no,
yeah,
you didn't.
Yeah, no. Just...
So did you find out right away?
Yeah, I think so. I think I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. I know I always talk about how great it was just to be a part of the Quartermains, right? Just coming into that family and just all the fun we used to.
Yeah.
Well, some fun and some. Well, so it was like a family, wasn't it?
It was a family. No, it was, you know, and gosh, yeah, it was amazing. And you were there, too, with the first Edward and Lila.
Yeah.
And, you know, David was such
David
a
Lewis
character.
Amazing. Yeah.
You know, and Stuart. And I knew Stuart from, you know, when I was really little and watched him as
Prince Charming.
Yeah.
Sure,
I was just kind of wide-eyed like, wow, that's Prince Charming. And no, it was like, yeah, it was exciting.
Was there any times, you know, sorry, Bradford, I'll let you talk today. Were there any things that like stand out when we would do all the Quartermain stuff? Because the story I tell a lot on the road and when we do this is how Anna Lee always, she had a different chair here than she had at home. So when she would come here, she wouldn't know how to work it.
Yeah.
And Craig would be like, Anna Lee's coming. Get out of the way because she just kills all the furniture and almost killed Leslie one time, you know. And
Making an entrance,
absolutely.
Well,
especially
the Quartermain den.
Oh, in the Quartermain den, it's not a big entrance. And you know, bless her heart. Oh my gosh, she was just an angel.
She was.
But as she got older, the chair got further and further back, so she was more and more reclined.
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah.
She couldn't. So her feet were extended a little further.
Yeah. So she was.
So there was a little bit harder to maneuver.
Yeah. Sure.
And plus the vision isn't as good when you're upright.
Yeah. Totally.
So she would like bang.
And she didn't want help either.
No. And so sometimes we'd be waiting for her to arrive, and all we'd hear is like a thud.
Like on
the,
camera too. Sometimes, yeah. Like when she was making an entrance on camera.
And finally, like, let's just get her through the door, okay? Before
how about just start every scene with her in it already?
Yeah, I know, exactly.
And towards the end, that was what we did.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But she was amazing. It was just so fun, man. I had it's like some of the best times of my life.
When your character was also kind of talk about preppy and stuff. You was you were a different character.
Well,
before
you hadn't
the
hit
accident.
Your head. Yeah. You hadn't hit your head fun. On a rock yet.
Nope. Was it a rock or a tree?
It was a tree. I was there. I was there. I saved your life.
You did.
And then I beat up AJ.
Yes.
Because he was drunk.
Punch his face.
And then I think I took the fall. I think I said that I did it.
Maybe
you
did.
Of course, all the people who are listening are like, of course you took the fall. Well, you don't remember?
We don't remember.
We get blamed a lot for that. Yeah, we catch a lot of flack.
Because I was trying to protect him because he was drunk. And then I held it against him for a long time.
Yeah, and then
forever.
But like,
I hated AJ.
Like now,
for ruining Jade, and that was all about you. You destroyed my favorite cousin.
Are you guys? Yes. Are you guys full brothers, or is it like
half
brothers?
Cousins.
Oh, right, because
you're Tracy and Alan, brother and sister.
Okay, I'm there. I'm with you now. Right
now,
right,
you're there.
Yeah, I'm there.
Wait,
but I was so bitter at AJ for ruining you. Which I probably should have not ruining, but like turning you into a
right. Whatever I am.
Who's your dad?
Much more interesting. Much more interesting.
So who's Ned's dad?
Ashton. Larry. Lord Lawrence Ashton.
Larry.
That's his full name.
I never worked with him.
We call him Lord Ashton, but sometimes we call him Larry.
Lord Larry Ashton. He was Tracy's husband.
Ah, okay.
But the other actor who played Ned before me, Kurt McKinney.
Yeah.
Wonderful guy.
Yeah,
wonderful
Kurt's
actor.
Great. Yeah.
He worked with his dad a lot. But once I got here, I was all just Tracy.
So you were a recast?
Yes.
Okay. And did you feel the weight of that when you came in? Or did it?
You know what's funny? When I left Days of Our Lives, I felt like I didn't feel... like I was bringing myself, all of my stuff to the role. Kind of like you were thinking with Harris, like you probably thought you weren't good.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't feel like that Justin wasn't good, but I felt like I could do more. Like, for instance, I wanted to just be have a little more fun with it.
Yeah.
And I think Ned is also probably a little bit more like me than, Justin, because I think I do probably bring a little more humor to Ned than I did with Justin. Justin took himself so seriously, and I took it seriously. And so I was excited to get another shot at creating a new daytime character, honestly.
Okay. Yeah.
So I didn't really think, and it's funny, I did see Kurt and Jane do some scenes, and they were having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were like a team, like a comedy team. I went, my gosh, look at that. They're having a, like they're doing shtick.
Yeah.
And not that I was going to make him a shtickmeister, but I just thought, I'm not going to, you know what I mean? Days of Our Lives, at that time, I took myself very seriously. And, Adrienne, I loved her. And I was doing nothing but making mistakes. And I was begging for her forgiveness. And I was singing these beautiful songs. And I was the most romantic, sensitive, heartfelt, romantic character that was ever written for daytime television.
Do people laugh on Days? I don't think I've ever seen it.
Yeah, there's not a lot.
Not a lot of laughter.
Taking things out of context and irony and stuff. There's more irony now.
Sure, yeah.
But there wasn't... I didn't play any irony, that's for sure. I just played it as written, and I was going to, was it. And
drive it home, baby.
Yeah, drive it home. And so I came here thinking I wanted to do something.
Yeah.
So I took it as an opportunity and not really thought too much about Kurt, but just that, it's a new opportunity to do something different.
Well, that's a wonderful attitude to have.
No, it's cool, too.
It is.
Great to have another chance. It paid off.
It paid off because I really did feel like I think I had I put a lot into it. And I really tried to make this my own. And
awesome. So. Well, so can we go back a little bit?
Sure.
You don't know
anything about Wally.
Again, the great thing about this, and we say it all the time, is that we talk to people that we've been around for many years and feel like we know somewhat, but don't know that well ultimately. So, where are you from, Wally?
Well, I was born and raised in Billings, Montana.
Shut up.
Yeah, I was the youngest of five kids to Sid and Susie Kurth. And I went to Rose Park School, where I'd walk to school and walk back for lunch.
Wow.
And I went to Lewis and Clark Junior High.
Wow. Did they discovered the school.
They discovered education.
Lewis. No.
Clark.
William Clark came down the Yellowstone.
Good old Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pompey's Pillar and all that. Yeah. But I went to Billings West High School. And, it was great growing up in Billings. It was a population of 60,000.
Right.
And, and I did a high school production of Oliver when I was 10 years old.
Playing?
The Artful Dodger.
Hey.
And just like John York.
Yeah, I played him twice. Yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of like sealed the deal. Kind of like, wow, this is... Well, it's interesting because the year before I auditioned for... the high school teacher was great. He auditioned every kid in town to be in the show, and pretty much every young boy was in it. Because they had two different casts and stuff. But I remember seeing the movie, and I remember thinking, you know, Jack Wilde and all those, you know, all the dancing and the singing. Yeah. And I was always singing.
Yeah.
Being the youngest, I was singing was easy for me, and I was just always singing songs on the radio, and my brothers were always telling me to shut up. And so I knew I could sing, but I remember seeing the movie going, I could do this, and why didn't they come to Billings to audition these, you know,
those
actors
bastards.
For this movie? I could be in this movie. So when it came up the next year, I was ready to go. And
that's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, I was ready.
That you had that attitude then?
Yes.
And you weren't kind of fearful?
No.
Because a lot of people we chat with, you know, there's that fear of like, oh, okay, I'm going to do it, okay. But that's cool that you kind of knew.
Yeah.
As a young person.
And I was lucky. Yeah.
Your siblings didn't have any interest in, did any of them do plays?
Yeah, my oldest brother did, he played the little guy in a Music Man. I think he was the Music Man a couple years earlier.
Oh, yeah, Winthrop?
I think he was Winthrop.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. No, he didn't see Gary. No, he didn't sing Gary Indian. But he was in the.
Well,
he
sure,
he was one of the boys.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Kevin. But yeah. So I did that, and I was all fired up. I remember my dad had a friend who had some experience in theater. So I remember going in the living room, and we worked out the song where we were going to sing "Where Is Love." And I remember him. You come out here, and you have your head down, and you're thinking about "Where Is Love," and you're sad. And
oh boy!
And I worked it, and "Where Is Love?" And I was feeling so in love. And I'm sure my brothers who were watching are like, "Yeah, right. You're the baby. You get all the attention.
Sure,
you
know,
you've got more love than any of us."
And then you're Justin Kiriakis too.
Yeah.
At the same time.
So I remember going to the audition. I got to the first audition, then we had the big audition. I remember going out on stage, and it seemed like a huge stage.
Of course.
It was the high school stage. And I go, well, I want to audition for the Artful Dodger, but I want to sing Where Is Love? And they all started laughing.
Yeah.
They go, well, go ahead, sing them both. So I sang Consider Yourself and Where Is Love.
Amazing.
Yeah. I was like, I want to do it all. I want to sing all of her songs, but I want to play Artful Dodger.
Great.
And do you guys still need a director? Because I can do that too.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to direct this. You guys could all go home.
Yeah. So, did you just fell in love when you were like, when did it transfer into your head of like, oh, maybe? Because like in Montana, did you have anybody that had gone from Montana to Hollywood or Montana to New York that you're like, oh, that person did it. Maybe I could do it too.
No.
No. So like what?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, right.
Lewis and Clark.
Well, I kept it quiet. I kept it quiet. I mean, in high school, I was in the choir. I didn't want to do choir. My mom forced me to do choir.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't think,
choir. Was that a good thing?
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
It was really good because, as you know, you learn how to sing harmony.
Yeah.
And here I am in a band with Christian.
Sure.
Christian Taylor, my music partner, and it was all of us singing harmony. We started out as an acoustic duo, and then it was three-part harmony and four-part harmony.
So you started that band in high school?
When we started, actually, no, in down here in California.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But that experience of singing harmony and singing with other parts, you need that. You need to hear that. You need to, you know.
Absolutely.
And so... Yeah. That was great. So in high school, I did competitive drama, and we had a great drama teacher, and I wasn't very good at drama. There was like, it was called forensics, they called it. And you'd go in and you'd, it's a long story, but it's not like a stage and the lights and an audience. You're actually doing these scenes, these cuttings in front of your competition. And it was just way too weird. Like, wait a minute, I'm going to be doing like, I remember doing The Star-Spangled Girl by Neil Simon. I kid you not, I was in Havre, Montana, and... I had the first line, and I couldn't remember it.
Dude, it's happened.
I couldn't remember it. No, there's nothing worse.
Nothing worse.
Starting a scene, and you have the first line, and you don't
know
where
to go. There's
dude, everybody's looking at you.
Oh, and the woman that I was with, this young woman, young lady, I was probably 15, 16.
Yeah.
She just looked at me like, are you going to speak? Are you going to speak? And it was just a train wreck from the beginning to the end. And, of course, we got, like, the lowest score.
Aww.
But I remember afterwards, I remember the teacher telling me, and she was cool. She goes, Wally, just here's your lesson. Always remember your first line. And let me tell you something. I still sometimes have to think that. I still, like, you know what? You have a long scene, like, just remember your first line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Let's just get going.
That lesson from Havre, Montana, is one of those lessons that you know, you pick, you know, as you go through this career, you're like, you grab a thing here, grab a thing there.
Sure.
I still remember, just remember your first line.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
So that was that. But I did musicals. I did Showboat. I did Fitting's Rainbow. And, you know, it was all good in high school. And I had dreams. And so when I went to my first year of college was in Denver at a small liberal arts college.
And did you go thinking you were going to go for
theater? Yeah, it was all musical theater. And I did nothing but voice and dance and piano and music theory. I took a music theory class, which really helped me because I can play the piano now just because of the music theory. I read the guitar chords. And that was something that I had to learn by music theory. So then when I transferred to UCLA, the only way I got into UCLA was because I had such good grades at this small liberal arts college, because all I took was dancing and acting and singing.
Sure. So did you,
piano.
What was that about? Just wanted to get to LA or wanted
I met a girl who's from Beverly Hills and she wanted to go to UCLA.
Now we're getting to the story, the real story.
So did you meet her at this?
I met her at the school in Denver. Okay. So she came out here and I followed her down here.
Ah.
Her dad was a producer and so that was kind of, because otherwise it's a big city.
Well, sure.
Oh, yeah. LA is a big city. Oh, yeah. I would have never, but I mean, I was young. I was very green, very immature, very naive, and I needed to have her family. And I practically moved in. I was just like part of her family, and I worked in restaurants, and it was just how everyone starts.
So how many years at that school did you how many?
Just 1 year in Denver, Loretta Heights College.
And did you finish? Did you do 3 years at UCLA?
And then I went to UCLA, and I did 2 or 3 years. And then I went to a non-equity course call of the Pirates of Penzance with another couple guys. And I got into the non-equity. I got into the chorus of the equity production with Andy Gibb and Barry Bostwick and Pam Dauber.
Was that a tour? Or was
it was the national tour. The Amundsen, and then we went to Chicago. We went to San Francisco, Seattle, Chicago.
How was that?
It was amazing.
Of course. Yeah.
It was amazing because...
Get your own trunk?
Well, yeah, and I did. I got a trunk.
Yeah.
Exactly
awesome,
right.
Awesome, man.
And they took the trunk, but I was also like, I remember we got a stipend, like a per diem.
Yeah, per diem.
So it wasn't just getting paid to do the show, you got paid to live.
The thing is, the whole point of going on tour is that you don't spend your salary at all. You just live on your per diem and pocket your whole salary.
Oh, yeah. And that's I was living with friends in Seattle. I lived with an aunt in Chicago. So I was pocketing as much as I could.
Yeah, you're right. If you're not spending on hotels, you're pocketing your per diem. Yeah.
And then I got the lucky break of being they needed a second understudy for the Pirate King and the Sergeant.
Oh.
And I got both, which really pissed everybody off. No,
that's a lot of work, though.
It was a lot, but it was great. So I was basically the understudy to the sergeant.
Yeah.
And so he got sick. So I was in Chicago.
What'd
he
you
got
put
hepatitis.
In his food?
He got hepatitis.
What'd you put in his food, Wally?
How'd you give him hepatitis, Wally?
Yeah. Well, we were in a trunk together for about a day.
I get into that. Anyway, but there's a great story, and I've told this before. But anyway, in Chicago, I'm like thrust. Okay, so I'm the first understudy to the Pirate King now. Our Pirate King is Jim Belushi.
Oh, my
what?
Gosh.
Oh, you want to just leave
before
that name out?
Before Jim Belushi was Jim Belushi. Belushi.
He's Jim Belushi.
Patrick Cassidy was Frederick.
Yeah.
We did that. Andy Gibb and Barry did it in L.A., but they were done after the L.A. production. So Belushi and Cassidy came in, and we were like, of course, if you have a last name, you can make it in this career. But anyway, so I was the sergeant and the first understudy of the Pirate King, and John Belushi died. So Jim had to leave for the funeral.
Goodness.
So I was thrust on stage at the Schubert in Chicago, and I had to glue on a goatee. I knew what I was going to do because I'd stolen all of Barry Boswick's best bits.
Right.
And I knew kind of how I was going to make this my own and get out there and just,
take
the stage. And I went for it.
Wow.
And so they were thankful that I pulled it off. And then they moved me to the Broadway show where I ended up playing the Pirate King on Broadway the last 3 months of the Broadway show.
Are you serious, dude?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Like that has to be a...
It was a grand, incredible. Incredible experience. I remember thinking like, oh, gosh, that was easy. I just read about Joe Papp in my theater arts history class.
Yeah.
And now I'm like doing a Joe Papp production, and Joe Papp comes to... He saw me do the show before he gave me the part. I had to do it for him at the Minskoff Theater down there.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And he came backstage, and he just said...
You got it.
You're the Pirate King.
Wow.
Know? And he just like, and he walked away, and I was like, yeah.
Did you think on stage, were you like, I made it?
I did.
I made it.
My name was in lights. My name was going across the chorus line, the Schubert Theater had chorus line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they were advertising Pirates of Penzance because it was a New York Shakespeare Festival production. So I remember my friend said, Wally, you need to go out there and take a picture of your name going across the chorus line marquee.
Yeah.
I went, why? Well, because it's the Schubert Theater. It's the chorus line. It's the marquee, and you need your name is on the marquee. And I went, well, my name will probably always be on. I mean, I'm talking. This is
right. Yeah.
Whatever. So I remember going between a matinee, waiting with my camera, my old camera, waiting for my name to go across. I was standing right outside of Sardi's. You know, Sardi's is right across the street, just waiting. I missed it. Damn it. But I got it.
That's amazing, dude.
Wow. So then you're in New York. Were you still dating that girl back in L.A.?
We broke up.
When you were touring?
On the road, yeah.
That's better.
Touring is tough on a relationship.
Isn't it, though?
It really is.
You're the effing Pirate King.
Yeah, well, I was just Pirate 13 on the right when I left town.
Right.
Right.
But no, you go out of town when you're... 22, 23 years old. Yeah, it's just, you know,
it's not conducive for a relationship.
No, it's just, you know, it was just.
Thanks for getting me to Hollywood, honey. Bye.
No, she's still a dear friend.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, she's still That's a good amazing. Friend.
All right, so 3 months later, you're in New York. The show closes. You're like, well, what other Broadway show is going to pick me up? Or no, I need to move back to LA and do TV. What was it?
Well, as a matter of fact, the show was ending, and I got a call to audition. Now we're getting into the soap world.
Yeah.
So I meet Joan Danchenko, right? She's a famous, I think her name is Joan. Joe Danchenko, casting director for All My Children. They're casting Tad Martin.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I'd meet her, and she's like, we're looking for we're basically an adult Artful Dodger. And I am the Artful Dodger.
Dude,
I just played the Pirate King, who's basically a grown-up Artful Dodger.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. I'm going to go straight from Broadway right into Tad Martin on
Dude,
All
I'm
My
famous.
Children. This is like...
This is so easy.
This is as easy. I can't believe how easy this is. Who said this was going to be hard?
Yeah. Dude, that's amazing.
And obviously, Michael Knight, who's here now. Yeah. He got the role, and I'll never forget. I saw Michael Knight. We tested together. And I remember thinking, he's got a better look than me. I remember thinking, you know, you can go into an audition and go, he looks pretty good. And I remember I was still a little bit maybe cheeky.
Okay.
I wasn't quite maybe as chiseled as they like those, daytime.
Puffy chipmunk cheeks.
I think I was a little puffy. I was doing Broadway. And
a lot of eating on the road.
Yeah, and I didn't really, you know, and also I was younger, and I just... You know, I was a late bloomer, so I didn't have that, you know, that whatever, that TV face yet. In fact, I think that's what Shelley was saying, like, you need to lose weight, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever. That's Michael Knight was wonderful.
Yeah, he's great.
He got the role, and then, and I remember, so I was kind of disappointed, like, well, how did that happen?
Right.
I was supposed to get that. I was the Artful Dodger.
The
Pirate
best.
King. And so I ran out of money. Once again, I ran out of money. I did a play at the Cherry, I did Cherry Orchard up at... The Long Wharf.
Oh, wow.
With famous Morris Karnofsky from the group theater and Brent Spiner. It was a great cast.
Well, I mean that,
Stephanie Symbolist.
Wow.
Doing Chekhov at the Long Wharf, that's a big
deal. Yeah, so that was a nice credit.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a really nice credit. But basically I ran out of money.
Yeah.
And I just said, look, if I'm going to go back to the restaurant business, I am going to do it in L.A. Because I had a lot of friends who I went to school with at UCLA, Tim Robbins and Lance Guest and Cameron Dye, they were all working in TV and film. And I'm like, hey, those guys are doing it. You know what? And I kind of felt like in New York, in order to get on a Broadway show, it would help to have a TV credit and be an actor. So I went back here. And that was like in 84.
Yeah.
So I was bebopping around doing any odd job that I could until I got hired Days of Our Lives in 87.
Wow.
But I used to motor around on a so I went back to UCLA and it was great. I went back to UCLA and got my degree. So I had just a couple quarters left. So I left UCLA before. They came back after Pirates and everyone was like, "Why are you coming back? You've just been on Broadway." And I'm like, "Well, because I need to learn some more stuff. I don't feel like I know everything." And it was great. I did a play that was
get that useless theater degree.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
But I did. We did a musical review that ended up playing at the Kennedy Center in Washington.
Wow.
And called Brew and Ha Ha, and it was great. Written by students and brilliant, you know, wonderful actors that are all working on Broadway and TV.
Yeah.
And then I did a play that went to Italy, and we did it at the Teatro di Roma, in Teatro di Roma Square in Italy. So I went to Rome.
Yeah.
And did a play there. So going back to UCLA was like fantastic. That's two amazing productions. And I learned how to direct. I took a directing class, and I left there in 85, and I had a little moped. I remember going to auditions and mopeds and shaking all the way down. By the time I'd get there, I'd get out, and I'd be like, I'd still be shoulding on the sides, and I'd still be shaking and just rattling.
Vibrating.
Just rattled.
Yeah.
I mean, just rattling.
Yeah.
Just like,
yeah.
So I didn't really book anything, and I remember when I got on Days, I just remember, like, I was doing a lot of meditation back in those days, and I remember thinking, It was like Christmas time, and I remember meditating, and I remember going, the next audition I get, I'm going to nail it. It's going to be, I deserve it. I've earned it. I've been paying my dues.
Yeah.
No, crazy. I had a young daughter, and I just like, I got to support her.
Oh, gosh. Yeah,
and I was like, I'm going to do this. And so I get back, and my agent says, okay, I have an audition for you for Days of Our Lives. And I remember thinking like, oh, I guess I'll be doing a soap opera.
That's
honestly
awesome, dude.
I mean, that's how confident I was, which you really do need confidence.
Walking
100%.
You just need
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, you do.
You just, and you never, because also when you leave, and granted, 99% of the times you're not going to get the parts.
Yeah.
You need that confidence to just say, wasn't your day.
Yeah, moving on.
Moving on.
Yeah, totally.
Right. You know what? Okay, I guess they made a mistake. Whatever. Or like, they, you know, whatever.
It
wasn't meant to happen.
Yeah.
See, you just need that confidence, and I had it at that time.
Sounds
and,
like
yeah.
Today's episode of That's Awesome is brought to you by Theragun.
Have you heard of one of these things before?
I have now because the wonderful people at Theragun have provided us with a Theragun. It sounds violent, but it's not.
No, it's not at all. It's amazing.
It is a pretty amazing, I would maybe go so far as to say life-changing in some ways. It is a handheld, battery-operated, professional-grade percussive therapy device that helps alleviate pain, improve mobility, and enhance performance. Steve, do you want to tell us what percussive therapy is?
Well, yeah, look, I mean, I've had experience with this thing for the last probably, I don't know, 3 years.
Wow.
I see a chiropractor regularly, and he uses it first, basically on my whole body to just loosen me up. Because
your whole body, huh?
Almost. And there's, you know, there's pressure points that, you know, you get tight. You get
absolutely
tight everywhere just from life. You know, if you're not stretching or in yoga or something, you're going to get tight. And
absolutely.
I do. And I drive a lot. So,
yeah,
it's important for me to go to the chiropractor. But, man, that gun is so amazing that I'm so happy that we're doing this with Theragun.
Yeah.
Because now we have Theraguns. And,
yeah.
And I literally was going to buy two of them.
Right.
Like, it's amazing because it helps me so much. And, you know, obviously we're into health and fitness. We work out a lot. And even if you're not, because obviously you don't work out a lot, I know you told me there's some points that, you know, released a lot of tension for you.
Yeah. Well, you said driving. So I drive a lot too. And right in my hips, my hip flexors get super tight. And I went to a kinesiologist once who like pushed on it and like I cried because I guess I store stuff there too. And I use the Theragun. So basically, guys, this Theragun, it's a massage device, but it's unlike any massage device you've ever tried.
It's amazing.
It's designed by a chiropractor, and it's therapeutic for all body types. And some of the general benefits, you get relief from muscle tension, soreness, stiffness. It increases blood flow, improves range of motion, accelerates recovery. It activates muscles. It's body energizing. It's myofascial release for those people that know what myofascial means.
Well, look, I just think it's important. You know, I don't think we spend enough time on ourselves, and this is great because who doesn't like a massage?
I mean, and the handle is such that you can self-administer. Yeah. It's really well designed. So, you know, if whether or not you're waking up from a bad night's sleep or you're stressed at work, I mean, this is the best massage you'll ever get.
It's
pretty incredible. So check it out. Listeners of That's Awesome can get 2 free attachments with their purchase.
Yeah,
which
buddy.
Is really cool because depending on what muscle you're trying to get, you either want a wider base or maybe a more specific attachment. So 2 free attachments. It's fantastic. So go to Theragun.com/awesome. That's Theragun, Theragun.com/awesome to get 2 free attachments with the order of your Theragun. This week's episode is also brought to you by Plexaderm. Does your life sometimes feel like an episode of a soap opera? You know what those are, right? Are sleepless nights and busy lifestyles keeping you looking drained in the morning? Well, Plexaderm Rapid Reduction Serum can help. Plexaderm is a clinically studied serum that visibly eliminates your wrinkles, crow's feet, and under eye bags in minutes, restoring your youthful look. All it takes is 10 minutes to visibly reduce the appearance of those pesky under eye bags and fine lines. Darn eye bags! Us card-carrying members of the Puffy Eye Bag Society are always looking for help. So go to TryPlexaderm and use our code AWESOME for 50% off plus an additional $10 off. That's right, 50% off plus an extra $10 off. This offer is also available by calling 1-800-685-1292 and mentioning code AWESOME. Plexaderm is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you got nothing to lose. Visit TryPlexaderm.com today and use code AWESOME at checkout. That's TryPlexaderm.com, code AWESOME. Bye-bye, bags.
Well, wow. We can't just go by living in Westwood in the 80s, though.
Mm-hmm.
You went to, I mean, that's UCLA. That's
Yeah.
I was living there. How amazing was Westwood in the freaking 80s?
Yeah. All those theaters, too.
Oh, dude.
Oh, I went to
theaters. It's a theater, like movie a movie theater.
Every block.
Like
there was
2
a movie theater.
Per block.
Wow.
I remember telling somebody the other day, we used to go to midnight shows.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even imagine.
My dad.
Midnight.
Show. When I come out in summer, my dad, we'd literally see 30 movies. We'd go to 2 movies in a day. Westwood was like so hot. I mean, because UCLA, everyone lives on campus there, and it was always kind of young crowd and, you know, arcades, Westworld. Mm-hmm. There was that Westworld arcade there. It was amazing.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, no, it was very exciting. It was really cool. It was a great campus.
That's a great place to go to school.
It was, and I feel bad because I know how hard it is to get in there now. I know how really lucky I was.
Sure.
And honestly, I know it's because I was from Montana. Like, how many people from Montana? It definitely wasn't my grade.
Wow.
So when did the music, I know your music started, but when did you, like Christian, did you meet Christian out here? How'd you meet Christian? How'd that whole thing go down where you're like, hey, let's start a little band and do our thing?
So I was on Days of Our Lives, and I had a friend. I ran jogging through Brentwood one day. I ran into an old friend who was Andy Gibb's understudy in the Pirates of Penzance.
Wow.
His name is Jay Stokoe, lives in Nashville. And what are you doing, Wally? It's good to see you. He didn't go on the tour. He stayed here in L.A. because he had kind of a pop career going. And he won some big national singing competition. And we started talking, and next thing you know, he's like, I was doing Days of Our Lives, so I was just getting started. And he said, well, I'll manage you. So he kind of...
As an actor.
And like, I'll manage your music. And he made he produced an album that I did.
So how...
And he was like, and he used to work at... He was a teacher at the Music Institute. He started the Vocal Institute at the Music Institute. And one of his friends, one of the people who was working with him, who was at the Guitar Institute and the Vocal Institute, was Christian.
Mm.
So that's how I met Christian. And Christian was working in the office.
Wow.
And then I was doing, I remember doing Give Super Me Wings, talented. Give Me Wings somewhere, which was like Justin's greatest hit, which I still play today and still like, I just played with James in New York
Patrick,
a couple weeks ago and I played it and I'm like, it's still a great, great song.
Yeah.
And I played it probably 3 or 4 times on Days of Our Lives. And he sang it and he said, I think he saw like, oh, I got some talent. Because then he said, why don't we start? He was working at Capitol Records. And he goes, we just signed an acoustic duo. We could do it just as well as they did. So that was his, you know, like, hey, let's do it. We can do this.
Yeah.
I'm like, great. He's a great musician. Our voices blended beautifully.
Yeah.
And he's just such a professional. And he's like one of those, he's a great music partner because I come up with some ideas, but he's an executor, an executor, whatever. Yeah, he executes. He follows through.
Yeah.
And he's still that guy that follows through.
Always
and
has.
Gets the job done.
Yep.
And you need a partner that's like,
totally.
You can come up with all the ideas you want.
I know.
But unless you got someone who helps you, who gets it done,
I know.
It's just going to sit there.
Sure.
So he has been a wonderful friend, a wonderful partner. And we just started playing then. And then we went from a duo to a trio and a quartet. Now we're like, and there was a full fledged rock band. And now, and we played on General Hospital.
And so you played at some Super Soaps, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We played on Super Soap. But he was also Eddie Main and the Idle Rich. Was our band the
That's
Idle Rich?
Right, Eddie Main was the alter ego of Ned.
Yeah. So when Clara was here and Wendy was here, they came up with this idea to give Ned a little bit of, you know, just like
edge.
Jason became Stone Cold.
Sure,
I became a rock star.
You became Eddie Main.
I became Eddie Main, wearing the black leather pants and.
And is that when you had the studio in behind your house?
Yeah, yeah.
That's
Christian lived in the.
That's where I made my two rap songs.
And by the way, I thought those were good rap songs. I really thought I was impressed. I really was. I mean that. Have you ever played them for people?
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
the demo.
That is.
They're there. That's it.
That's. Now we just got to find a cassette player to play it. Or is that just more of like an art like piece now? You just hold it up to remember?
It
like,
was.
There's no way
dude,
to play that.
I did a rap song too. I think that kind of inspired me. I did a rap song, but it wasn't as good as your rap song.
Well, whatever, dude. It was great because Christian produced it for me, right? Yeah. I was like, Wally, he's like, go talk to Christian. And it was such a, to produce the song then was such a project that it took days for us, and you know, for you guys, you gotta play every instrument, you gotta do all this, but for me, I could you know, I went and found some tracks and I'm like, hey, let's try this and this, and you know, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
but we did two songs.
He's a studio rat. He's an engineer.
It was awesome, dude.
And he it was so fun
but anyway.
So
he might have done that in his room upstairs, right? Or did
we
he did, do it
no,
downstairs?
No, upstairs in the room. We were upstairs.
Eventually we moved and built a studio in the garage.
Yeah, I remember always walking upstairs because I
in his bedroom or something.
Totally. It was so awesome, though. It was cool.
You played guitar all through your youth into that era, or did you
learn guitar? I didn't start playing the guitar till I came down here in California, my very first year when I followed my girlfriend down.
Yeah.
I was working at the Cheesecake Factory.
Nice.
In fact, I was one of the very first employees of the Cheesecake Factory in Beverly Hills, which was the first Cheesecake Factory restaurant in America. I always tell people, like, I was there at the beginning. I was making sandwiches and salads. And some gal was there. I might have been hosting at that time in the summer. Her husband's, they have a band, like a casual band, like a wedding band.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So we started talking, and they're like, well, I do voice lessons. So I started working with her, singing, and he was teaching me guitar.
Wow.
And I learned the guitar really one summer. In fact, I was just singing a song with James, a Neil Young song called Comes a Time.
Yeah.
And I was going through, like, I wanted to learn some old songs that I have, you know, that I knew that I haven't. And I realized, wait a minute, I know this song. And I started playing, like, I learned it that summer, all those years ago. And it was fun, because James and I sang it together.
Yeah.
And so I learned the basics, you know.
Sure.
And like I said, I took music theory the year before, so I had...
Right, so
if you know music theory, that it really helps.
Absolutely.
Because there's a real mathematics to music.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And there's a real theory underneath all of it. So when you see a chord... You know, okay, this is what it is. Then you go to like the 1-4-5 and the relative minor and all that. And then I had another friend at UCLA who was a great piano player. And I was still reading notes on the music. And because I took piano lessons. And I'm like, oh, plucking out the notes. Oh, that's so hard. And he goes, Wally, don't look at the notes. Just read the guitar chords. And he was he's made lots of albums. He's just one of those musical guys that just plays by ear. But he said, just because he plays for like auditions and stuff, he goes, just read the guitar chords. You don't look at the music. And you're going to be singing the melody, so you don't need to play the melody. I went, oh. So I just look at the guitar chords. And I still play to this day. And as long as you memorize the positions
of the chords.
Of a chord, like a G. Yeah. I know where a G is. Yeah. I know an A flat. I know where all those things are, because if you can sort of practice that, you can get your way around almost any song.
And then you learn how to fill rhythmically in that chord.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that takes a little bit. You got to, you know, you can move. I still play to this day, and I still feel like I'm getting better. But it's still that same rudimentary looking at the guitar chords, reading it, and transferring it.
Yeah. There's so much more freedom in that than fucking.
Yeah, and as long as I know the song, I can sing the melody. I don't need, like, I can do Billy Joel. I can do Elton John, because I'm just playing the chords underneath it, and I'm singing the melody, so I don't need to, I don't need to play. Well, yeah. It'd be helpful if I could play as good as they, but I don't need, I mean, I can get by.
Right.
And that's
how,
all.
How yeah. often do you play still?
You know what? I play a lot more now, and I play the guitar. I try to play at least every day.
Wow. Good for you. Yeah, so is that kind of like, you know, because we always talk about here's great. Sometimes it doesn't fulfill you creatively. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as it maybe once did, or during, you know, a certain stretch of a story, it is creative. I had, like today, I had some scenes that was great. It felt good. I had some good stuff, and that's why we do this.
Yeah.
Then there's days that you're just kind of filling space.
Right.
So music, has it always been kind of your outlet to go to be like, man, I could create a song. I'm singing.
Yeah.
I'm on stage. This is awesome.
Yeah.
You know,
like I can be, you know, sometimes I'm just sitting around the house, and if I'm not working, and I've done all my work, and I'm just like, you know, if my wife's upstairs working, and I can, sometimes I'm like, you know, are you going to be on the phone, or can I go down and play? And I'll go down there.
Yeah.
And I just like, even playing songs that I know, or sometimes I'll bring out a songbook, like, let's see if I can figure out some old Cole Porter, and let's, you know what I mean? Just whatever. Yeah. I just sort of, or hear something on the radio, like, I'm going to go down and learn that. And nowadays, on YouTube, learn the guitar.
I've learned a few songs just sitting in my dressing room.
Yes.
It was amazing.
Just, they're showing you what to do, the little riffs that you might not have been able to figure out.
Yeah.
So I just feel like I enjoy it now. It's my time. And the piano, I mean, like Rocket Man, I'm like, all my Elton John songbook didn't have a Rocket Man, so I went and got a songbook just with Rocket Man.
Yeah.
Well, now I got it. I don't hit the high note up, you know, like that, but I can play it now, and I'm like, it sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah.
I finally know all the lyrics.
That's
because
amazing.
The lyrics are sometimes are hard to hear what he's singing.
Well, because not all of Elton John's lyrics necessarily make sense either.
They don't, and he kind of, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
They're very poetic, and sometimes you miss.
And he'll say things in a peculiar way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's cool, man.
No, I do, and I find that it is a nice creative release. And that's why I enjoyed going out with James.
Yeah.
And going out because I'm singing these songs by myself, but I do want to, why not share it with people who might want to hear it?
Yeah. They definitely, I mean, so look, I think you guys, you know, would be great to do stuff together.
Yeah.
You know.
We enjoyed it. We'll definitely do it again.
You guys should do it again. For sure. When you're not working on your two shows.
I know. And so
look at this guy's on two shows.
So are you the mayor of both towns?
Yeah, what's going
Salem
on here?
Man,
well, sadly, Laura stole the election.
Oh, that's right. She stole the election. Right.
So Ned is no longer the mayor of Port Charles.
The hanging Chad.
Were the Russians behind it?
The hanging Chad, Port Charles.
Nicholas. Exactly. Nicholas. Yeah. There was some Chad. There was some horseplay. There was some Chad horseplay.
Oh, it was Nicholas?
Yeah, it's Nicholas.
That's awesome.
Have a recount.
Recount. Hanging Chad.
That's amazing. So it was the Greeks. It wasn't the Russians because the Cassidines.
It was the Greeks. Yeah.
It was a little Cassidine, a little bastard.
That's amazing. So, but now Justin, the way he started on Days, who is Justin now?
So 10 years ago, Ken Corday, thank you for calling me. I was out of work.
Yeah.
And it wasn't working on either show. You know how that is. It's just like, hey, I need a job. I left General Hospital in 2005, I think, 2004, 2005. They took me off contract like a lot of people.
Sure,
and they didn't do – back then, they didn't do the recurring thing, which they should have.
Yeah.
Kind of like once you're off, like, okay, now it's just – I mean, they don't do that now. They like if take you off, they really will use you.
Yeah. They'll use you like you're on contract.
Yeah,
or exactly. Sometimes more.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is weird.
But they didn't do that here. So I did a little stint on As the World Turns, the crazy psychopathic ventriloquist.
What?
I worked with Maura on As the World Turns.
Did you?
Maura's son killed me, shot me in the back as I was trying to like.
You were a psychopathic ventriloquist?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Are you sure it wasn't on Passions?
No.
No.
No. Magic was one of my favorite movies, you know, the Anthony Hopkins movie.
Oh, yeah.
So I always wanted to be like do a ventriloquist thing. So they offered it. I knew it was going to be a short run and it was in New York and I thought, I need the job.
Sounds creepy as hell.
It was really creepy.
Sounds fun, though.
Yeah.
It was fun and creepy. It was weird because it was during a writer's strike, too. So then that was weird because like the scripts were just suddenly appearing and they couldn't really.
Magic.
Yeah.
Magic. So did you have a dummy?
Did you learn?
Oh, I had a dummy. Yeah, don't get me started on the dummy.
I have a dummy, too.
Because the dummy.
I'm right here.
We go on the road. I'm a ventriloquist. You didn't know?
Yeah.
Wait till you see.
I worked my butt off for this dummy. I mean, I was manipulating. I was practicing.
Was
I took the dummy home to L.A. with me. I brought the dummy
is
back.
Is that weird?
Stuck it in the suitcase. I did it all, you know.
Is that kind of weird, like pulling it out of the suitcase? Like, this is like.
Yeah.
This thing, I mean, this is like a weird.
It's a dummy. Dummy. It's like, yeah. But it was Cowboy Jack. You know, I had a voice. I'm Cowboy Jack. And I tried to like talk loud ears. I didn't move my mouth. Well,
that's how everyone talks in Montana.
The executive producer, exactly, was like, hey, he's not a real ventriloquist, so don't ever put him on, like, don't do a two-shot. Oh. So I was, when I watched, I'm like, well, why am I working my butt off trying to manipulate
He's not
it?
A real ventriloquist.
So don't, because there was never shots of me being the ventriloquist. It was always Cowboy Jack and me.
Was that meant to protect the actor?
I think it was meant to protect me, yeah. Because I was complaining to the directors, like, why are you never showing me do the thing? Because, by the way, I could be a bad ventriloquist. I don't have to be a pro.
Sure.
And because why am I working my tail off getting this to do when I could be talking like this? Right. I could be opening my mouth because you're not even looking at me closing my mouth, you know? That's anyway, awesome. I talked to Maura West about that.
Yeah.
It was creepy.
Oh, wow.
And I was totally obsessed with her, and then I tried to attack her, and it was not. And her son shoots me in the back.
Who tried to attack her? Was it you or the dummy?
It was me. The dummy tried to talk.
Was the dummy talking
to you? There was a few moments where I said, please get this where we're talking to each other. Because that's like in magic, that's where you crack. That's where you know he's like lost it. So he did have a few of those scenes.
Right. I like it.
I can't remember now. Someone will hate. I'm sure people
Somebody's
know.
Somebody's got to put this
whether
on YouTube.
Cowboy Jack was telling me not to do it or
devil?
Telling me Wait, to do it.
Right.
Yeah,
was
whether
he the devil or the angel, right?
Exactly. I can't remember whether he was the devil or the angel.
Yeah.
But I went down hard.
With shot bullet, in the back.
With a bullet in my back.
Wow.
But then.
And then Ken called
so you. So, yeah, 2009, they asked me to come back as a lawyer.
Oh, so not Justin.
As Justin, but as a lawyer. When I left, I was in construction.
Okay.
And I came back as a lawyer. I'd just come back from Dubai where I was working with my Uncle Victor. John Aniston, bless his heart, is still there. He was still there when I got back.
Unbelievable, man.
Peter was there. Christian was there at the time. So my first scenes were those three. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe I'm back here.
Yeah, right.
And that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then in 2015, which is 4 years ago, I came back here. They asked me to come back here and do a nurse's ball, and then they sort of got me involved here. So it was not my plan to be able to do both. I don't think it was just sort of happened that I just happened to be.
Was that the motorcycle nurse's ball when you did like the Eddie Main throwback?
I think I did one before that.
Okay.
I think it was the Meatloaf song.
Do anything for love?
No.
Dang it.
Come on,
man.
What was the name of that? It was, I don't know. I can't remember the name. The Kiss. Your Lips. Oh, I can't remember. Okay. Everyone's going to be hating me right now.
Someone's going to tell us.
Yeah. Right. They'll be screaming. They're screaming at their
device. Yeah, they're screaming.
Device.
Right. Screaming. I'm like, I can't believe you don't know that song. Yeah. So that was the first one.
Right. And then you just kind of lingered.
And I believe that was the first time we got Olivia. Olivia sees me, and we have a little connection. And, you know, Lisa and I decided to work it, you know.
Let's put our foot in the gas here.
Sure. Why wouldn't you?
And absolutely. I remember her because she tested for Olivia. Or not, Lois.
Lois.
Back when they were recasting Lois. I remember Lisa from there.
Wow. Yeah.
And I thought she was great. I was thinking that she might get the part. Great. But so I had an opportunity to work with her, and so we just went for it, and they saw a little magic, and so they developed that, and Ron developed that.
Yeah.
And here we are doing that.
Now Ron's over at Days.
Yeah.
And now Ron's right. Dude.
Yeah.
It's so funny. That was a small pool.
Yeah. Yeah, and Ron, and I think I can say this, so like 6 months ago, they put me under contract, and they really worked me a lot. These last 6 months have been, I will say, have been the most challenging, emotionally demanding material of my career.
Good for you, dude.
How fun.
Yeah.
Is that exciting for you?
It's very exciting.
Has any of that aired?
It starts airing in a little while.
Yeah.
Today.
Right.
Things start. That's when the Justin really starts hitting
you've been doing this a long time, and you had some emotional stuff before, story-wise. But at this point, because you kind of had a break, right?
Yeah.
You had a break.
Yeah.
You probably weren't burnt out from working too much.
No.
Or emotionally.
No.
Right? So were you kind of did you know it was coming?
No.
Like, you didn't even know it was coming?
No. No, I really did. I really didn't. They just called me out of the blue and said, we want to put you under contract. And I said, well, I don't want to do that. I want to work on General Hospital, too. Last time you guys did that, I had to quit.
Right.
And so they said, Okay, well, we'll just we'll work. We'll figure out a way to do. You can do both.
That's amazing. Good for them. Good for them, and good for you.
Yeah,
because I think both shows benefit a lot. So, you know, that's
well,
great.
I'd certainly like to think so. I keep asking people if it's confusing, and the fans don't seem to be confused or mind.
Well, I mean, I don't know how many people do a lot of people watch both. I don't know.
Well,
that's true too.
It's a good question, yeah. And I think, yeah, obviously they share different, they're different networks,
different
but
yeah.
There are people that do watch both because, yeah. And in fact, they tell me like they're such fans of soap opera that when they took the other two shows off,
they migrated.
They started watching all the soaps. They wanted to watch another show. Yeah, they missed either On My Children or One Life to Live or Another World or As the World Turns.
But it's weird.
And they just wanted to watch more soaps. That's their comfort. That's their. They like the genre. They love it.
Yeah.
But I'll see you on there. Like, I'll just see, and you're on there, and I go, oh, that's Justin. I don't even think that's Ned. Because you're in Salem, and you're with your people.
Yeah.
So you're Justin.
I'm with my people.
Here,
exactly.
In the Quartermain Den, you're Ned.
I'm Ned.
So it's not bad.
Yeah, no.
I like it.
People go like, oh, is it confusing? I'm like, well, no. The scripts have Ned.
Is there?
And then the other script says Justin.
Is there any – when you first started doing – well, I guess – yeah, when you went back to playing both characters, was there a conscious approach to – or was it already in your body?
I couldn't do it. I couldn't make a conscious approach. I just had to go with my instincts. I just
had to
I didn't want to get in there like, oh, no.
What's different
how's
between
– yeah, exactly. I just thought, you know what? I'm going to rely on the language.
Sure.
I'm going to rely on the suit. I'm a suit and tie guy over there. I'm a lawyer.
Ah.
So that already – and I'm working with, you know, Judy – who plays Adrian, my wife of 30 years.
So you already have these relationships that they're already there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I know, and I tell this to people. I go, Ned, so much of Ned is who I am talking to Tracy.
Yeah.
I'm her son. And that my character comes from that
relationship.
Relationship.
A
that
times,
dance
yeah.
that we do. And the same thing with John Aniston.
Yeah.
Uncle
yeah.
Vic. He's my father figure. I just react to him the way Justin would and the way the characters would. And that's
–
so I sort of depend on my fellow actors to change – to help me with my character.
Well, it's interesting. We've always talked about that, about how it's so unique in our industry that, you know, playing these characters for so long, those relationships – you know, so much so the work that you do when you're coming into a scene is like, how do I feel about this character? What do I want from this character? Like, that's the homework that you do when you're playing a character you've never played before.
Yeah.
But when you've been playing these characters for years, those questions are answered. And even when you're in a scene with somebody, even if you're not talking explicitly about those specific things, it's imbued within the relationship. So it's easily accessible and sometimes plays even when you're not trying to play.
And not to sound corny, but sometimes it's just in the eyes of the other person.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like with Judy.
Yeah.
It's like as soon as you look in that, you're there. That's it. I'm in.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So.
Exactly.
Wow,
that's,
man.
That's really –
but
really
but,
cool.
But it was a good question because I knew that if I get into like, well, Ned wouldn't do this, but Justin would – I just thought that's way too much thinking.
Is one more fun than the other?
Well, no, because I think they are still different in a way. I mean, you know, I still – but over there is great because I have a son. You know what I mean? And I have an Uncle Victor and I have a wife and all the stuff that goes with all that. And over here, you know, I got a new wife.
Yeah.
I can't say anymore, but I mean, but I have all the my cars, Aunt Monica, and I have I got Jason, and I've got, you know, all the craziness that happens in the Quartermain dens, and so it's just I don't know, they're just different, you know. Definitely over here, I'm more of a team player,
because
the Quartermain, so much of the Quartermain story happens like a Quartermain
family
story.
Sure,
over there is a little more one on one, a little more, you know, just. The cast isn't quite as big.
You're your own unit over
A little bit more over there. A little bit more like just two character scenes. And over here, the scenes are like more four or five characters.
Yeah.
Now, you know, talking about this challenge that you just had, have you found different tactics to approach that material than maybe you would have used 25 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. And has that been interesting to you?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. Well, talking about story, can you
thanks
just talk about process?
Yeah, you know what? You know what? I'll tell you this wonderful thing that I talk about. You know, you just grab things from different places.
Mm-hmm.
I had an acting teacher years ago who said this one thing that I thought was – he said a lot of things that, you know, I've forgotten. But one thing that I remembered that he was – that the evolution of an artist, you start with pure instinct.
Sure.
And then you – learn technique, and you become instinct with technique. Mm-hmm. And then you go to the third stage where it's pretty much all technique. And then you go back to like technique with instinct, and then you end with just still instinct.
Mm. Interesting.
It's sort of like you start with instinct, sure, and you end with instinct, but you go through this thing where you're building the technique, and the technique's still there,
sure,
but just go back to your instinct.
Yeah.
And when I was doing the Artful Dodger and Oliver, I remember walking into my first rehearsal, and I knew the script backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
Why are people still looking at their scripts?
Right.
Sure. I've already got my accent. Yeah. Hey, what are you staring at? Ain't you never seen a jet before? You know, I've got my accent. I was like, oh, ready to go, the Artful Dodger. So I was just pure, and I always tell people, like, I think that was probably my best performance in my life, because I didn't doubt.
Right, and weren't looking at yourself from the outside either.
No, I was just going
for playing.
It. Just playing, just going for it. Probably incredibly hammy. I think there was a few people said, like, yeah, you sure are a ham, which I will say hurt me, because late I'm like, oh, I don't want to be hammy. I remember thinking I want to be hammy. So that was the beginning of my, you know, getting
of the judgment.
The technique. So I get to UCLA.
That's why they say don't read reviews.
And I'm learning method. Right. And I'm like just drinking that orange juice, that, you know, that imaginary orange juice. And I'm like working up the sense memory. And I'm like, I'm not going to be hammy. I'm going to be real. Just torturing myself like we all did.
Yeah. Sure.
We all do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got to be
what
real.
You do. Right. I know.
And now flash forward all those years, 50 years, and I'm like, you know what? I got this. I know how to, like, I got the thing. I'm just going to go with my instinct again. So I will say that I've been relying more on my instinct. Just like, I know my lines backwards and forwards.
Sure.
Do you think I don't have to think about them. I really, and maybe it's just because I'm old. I'm like, I don't want.
No, you've always known yourself, though, dude.
Well, but no. When I was here, Steve, I was like looking at my lines the night before. And I remember I did like, okay, let's go. I was like confident that I was going to get them. I wouldn't screw up, but I was not knowing them backwards and forwards. Okay. Now I like, fair. I feel like I got this because we work in a one-take world, people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, especially over
sometimes days straight to tape. Yeah. You know, one take or straight to tape. Yeah. And I don't want to suck. I just want to like be able to like come, you know, like Finola says, you want to be able to walk out to your car proud of yourself.
Yeah.
That
is true. The walk to your car.
You just want to not have any regrets. Like, right. I laid it all out there. I did the best I could.
Or sometimes just the walk off stage down to your dressing room.
That's true too. But there's something about the way you carry yourself from as you walk out of the door of the building. Excuse my voice is a crack.
Well, he hit puberty yesterday. It was amazing. I watched it.
But like on a day where you feel we have a beautiful sky outside of our studio, and I find that when I have a day that I'm proud of, I see the sky more when I walk out the building. Yeah. And when I have a day that I'm not proud of, I see more of the pavement.
Blacktop. That's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
That's a great analogy. That's absolutely right.
Now, do you...
So I really do try to, like, know my lines backwards and forwards, so I really don't have to think about it. So when we get out there, I'm just playing. I'm just improvising. I'm just feeling like I'm doing it for the first time. And everyone does it.
Yeah.
We all have our own way of doing it.
Sure.
Back in the day, I did it by not really knowing my lines. So it felt like I was saying it for the first time.
Right.
Now, I know it so well, it'll feel like I'm saying it for the first time, you know?
Right.
So it's just my method now is to like, kind of like the way I used to do it, like I did when I was 11. I'm going to like just know it and then.
When you're doing some of the stuff that you've, you know, described that you've done over there, when you know you're going to be drawing from yourself a lot and, you know, the uncertainty of where either the emotions are going to come from or what, if you don't know your words word perfect, that's hard to be free with that sometimes.
Yeah, it's true.
If you're just doing like fun Kelly stuff, irreverent Kelly stuff, then not being so married to the words can sometimes feel playful, and you can get a little playful with that.
Yeah.
But you're never going to. I would be terrified to go into the kind of stuff that you're talking about. Not knowing.
Yeah.
But the Kelly's.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing today?
Oh,
kind of flirty stuff. Whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that's easy. And sometimes if you don't know it so well and you're not...
That's right.
You're not married to choices, then fun stuff can come.
That's right.
So, but,
And you're right. And there are times when I'm like, I don't need to know this bad. I mean, I do know it, but it's like it's not that difficult.
Well, sometimes you don't have... you have so much to do over at Days, especially, where you have to pick and choose almost sometimes, right? You're like, I'm going to know this, but I'll kind of know this one.
Yes, exactly right.
You know?
And so I don't... Yeah. You get to pick and choose. And also, like you said, sometimes when you don't really know, it also helps you in a way, too.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you find, Wally, that that now that you're more mature?
Yes, I'll admit that.
Yes, more mature. Do you find that you're more vulnerable? Just your baseline is more vulnerable than it was, say, 20 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it awesome?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's it makes it so much easier.
I mean, and also I realize, like, I'm watching, you know, a commercial, and I'll start crying.
that's menopause.
I don't have to. I mean, like, I don't have to manufacture that.
No,
I don't have to come up with a sense memory. I was just watching something. So, you know, you can get emotional. So I don't know about you, right? It just happens suddenly. Well, so why wouldn't that happen just suddenly? You know, in a scene where you don't have to have to look at something to get you sad, you there. It's like you just, if you're listening and you're willingly
open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll affect you. And if it doesn't, it's okay. Or, just go with it. You know, I mean, I'm just not judging. I'm not trying to do anything. I'm like this sort of,
It's interesting. We were talking to Jonathan Jackson a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about him approaching emotional material.
Terrific actor.
As a young person without a lot of life experience, right?
Yeah.
And he talked about empathy.
Yeah.
And feeling like a connected empathy to humanity. And as a young person, that's remarkable. But what, going back to that thing about relationships, if your relationship with your acting partner is
your voice okay?
I know, I'm losing my voice a little bit.
Poor
is
guy.
So carved out, and then the circumstance, you see someone that you care about in a circumstance, it's not a stretch of the imagination to get emotional about it.
Yeah.
Right? There's nothing, you don't have to use a lot of technique to try to, you know, you don't have to think about a dead dog or.
That's right.
Do you know what I mean? If you're looking at someone that you care about, you don't have to love them as a romantic partner in your life to think about what loving them as a romantic partner in this world feels like.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that is relationship based, right?
Yes.
And if you have that vulnerability, if you're connected somewhat to that vulnerability, you can just go there and there's freedom in that, and it's pretty wonderful. Yeah,
I had to do some stuff where I just had to trust my instrument,
and
people seem to be happy about it.
And so your partner too, because that's a huge thing, right?
Yes,
that's a huge thing.
Yes,
for me it is. I don't know if it is for you. I don't want to speak for you.
When you're younger, you don't. It's you want to make sure you're good. You want to make sure you please the producers and the writers and your fellow actors, and you put a lot of pressure on yourself and now, especially with one take, you could even add more pressure to yourself if you weren't careful.
Sure.
And so it's I'm always very, very impressed with a lot of the younger actors that I work with.
Oh, wow.
Because I think they actually were better than I was in a way. I mean, I think there's some really good young actors who really have great instincts.
Is mm-hmm. that, do you think some of that is the style that is celebrated now is different than the style when you were coming up in some ways?
I don't know.
Or like,
I don't know they're just, you know, I think there's just a lot of good talent somehow coming to California. And I think it's just, I don't know, but I'm just, there's some really good actors here and over on Days of Our Lives. And then I watch on CBS. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
And I mean, it seems like the last few years I've been the judge for the young leading man category. And I'm always just really impressed, you know, for the most part. Like, these kids really, and I know how quickly they work, how fast we work, and how they don't get a lot of takes.
Yeah, sure, that's when I was Harris Michaels, that's what everyone was saying.
Where did he come from?
And no one cares where he went.
Wow. Well, Wally, you are in the prime.
I don't know how old you are.
Yeah, I'm not really in my prime.
That's what's crazy. You got two freaking shows. You're playing music. It's amazing, dude. It's so cool to see too, and it's so great to have you back here. I know you were here, came back before I did, but
yeah,
it's just it's just always it's just awesome, dude.
Oh no, it's I feel it's really, so blessed. Honestly,
it's a huge blessing.
I am incredibly grateful.
Yeah.
And I love, and I also, I tell people and they don't, and I think I was telling Roger this, I'm like, I always pictured myself when I was younger, when I left Montana, I didn't want to be on a sitcom and for 2 or 3 years and then never be heard from again. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have a career where I was in my 50s and 60s and still was on TV and still was working.
Yeah.
And I think
being on a soap probably is the only, when you think about it. Yeah. I mean, there's not, I mean, yeah,
unless you're Judge Judy.
Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I sort of did what I wanted to do.
That's great.
Absolutely.
And also, I was in a genre, too, where I got to play music, which is what I always wanted to do. I wanted to do music and, you know, and TV and act.
Awesome.
And I remember people going, well, you're never going to do that. Well, I did it.
Yeah.
I found the genre for me. And I've been so blessed to be in soaps for the last 32 years.
Yeah.
Because I got to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm still doing it.
Yeah.
I'm still singing. I'm still
kicking
acting
ass, buddy.
And giving material that's been the most challenging of my career. Are you kidding me? How lucky am I?
That's great. It's awesome.
It's awesome, man. Well, we're just basking in your glow.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm gonna just hang out with him. Can I carry your trunk?
Yeah, man, my trunk.
I'm gonna carry your trunk, dude.
Dang,
your trunk is full, my
trunk.
The trunk.
That's awesome.
That trunk made it all the way across America.
I love
trunk.
It.
Yeah,
those trunks are the best,
dude. Thank you for just doing this. I know you're busy, obviously. Yeah,
thank you for inviting me.
So,
I'm
thanks
out
so
of
much.
Ball.
Yeah, dude, it's great. Please come back. You know, if you have any, you have anything you want to, you know, just promote?
No, I got nothing.
We're pretty famous now.
No,
and
I got nothing.
we get a lot of downloads now.
Hey, well, is there any music if people want to hear your music? Is there a place they can go?
Not really. Okay. I'm gonna do actually. I do sometimes get on my Facebook and
what's your Facebook
songs,
under?
Just a few songs. Yeah, my name or Wally's fans of Wally Kurth.
Yeah,
yeah.
At YouTube. I'm gonna. There's a few more songs that I've learned that I wanna upload. Yeah. So I'll be
Are
doing
Are you on
that.
Twitter at all?
I do Twitter, Wally Kurth at Twitter.
Okay, so
I'm probably on Twitter more than anything else.
Yeah, so follow Wally on Twitter and you can figure out where else he's going to be.
Yeah.
So.
But you know what? Right now, things are going to rock on days, and I'm back here at GH, and I know things are going to be rocking here for a while.
It's getting good, dude.
We have a big hiatus coming up on days, so I'm going to be over here. So
awesome.
Awesome, man.
It's going to be one of those situations where I'll be doing
That's
both.
Amazing.
If you like Wally.
If you like Wally.
Not everyone likes Wally. But if you like Wally.
Not everyone likes Wally.
You have an opportunity to see me on both shows.
Yeah, and just
next few months.
Tell Ken that I look really good in a patch. So if they need anybody, you know, just in case, you know, if they need anyone to fill in, you know, I'll grow the mullet back. I'll put a patch on. It'll be good.
I see it.
Amazing.
I see it.
All right, dude. Thank you, brother.
Thank
we love you,
so
man.
Thank you so much, dude.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Wally is so freaking cool.
Wally Kurth, ladies and gentlemen.
Wally Kurth. Living the dream, really.
Totally. It's amazing, right?
Living the dream.
Right. He's been on daytime for a long time, and he's having the best time of his life now.
And that was what was so cool about it was, like, talking to him about, you know, just the fact that in this era of his life, he's experiencing new things. I say new, obviously it's two shows he's been on for a while, but experiencing and taking it as new challenges rather than I've done this before.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he's just, you know, he's taking it as being grateful that he's got both jobs, and I mean, he's living a great life, and he's thankful. So it's great.
Yeah.
So. And I got some scenes coming up with him actually.
Oh, so, fun.
Yeah. It's going to be cool, dude.
That's awesome, man.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, speaking of fun.
Yes, my friend.
You're
welcome for that bad segue, everybody.
Yeah.
Gosh, we're fun. Wouldn't you love to come to see us?
We're just total radio professionals now, even though we're not on the radio.
That's right.
We have some great tour dates for you folks to come
yes,
and
we
see
do.
Us.
Yes, we do.
We got two left in 2019. Detroit on the 23rd, which is sold out, and Nashville on the 24th, which is near sold out.
Yep.
But if you want to see us in Nashville on November 24th, go to our website, stonecoldandthejackal.com, and get on it, because pretty soon that opportunity will be gone.
Yep.
Everything else is in 2020.
2020, dude, is lining up well. January, February. Now we added two dates in March.
Yes.
Oklahoma City and Kansas City. Can't wait for
those.
Very
exciting. The 2020, the first part of 2020, our tour, we're partnering with the Sandy Roman Ovarian Cancer Foundation for more information about the great work that they do, how you can help them, and if need be, how they can help you. Go to sandyovarian.org. So we start in January 2020 in Florida.
In Florida. We love
Florida.
Yeah.
And Alabama, North Carolina, Virginia.
Yep.
February, all Every city in Texas.
No, apparently not every city.
Apparently not. No, apparently not. But Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, San Diego. The House of Blues tickets are now on sale to everybody. So now that they are fully on sale, so don't wait on those. San Francisco, Sacramento.
Yeah, buddy.
And then, yeah, as you said, Steve, the 7th of March and the 8th of March, we're in Oklahoma City.
Yes.
And Kansas City.
Yeah, Oklahoma City's cool. OKC's cool.
Yeah, so we're trying to we are trying to come out and see you.
We're really trying. Get everywhere. So, and I'm working on May right now.
Yeah.
So yeah. We're working on locking.
Dude, there's
in
a
May.
Lot of things we're working on.
Is there ever? But yes.
Gosh, you we're guys.
We're trying to get the first half of 2020 set.
Totally.
You know, in stone and it's crazy because we've never really planned that far in advance.
Absolutely.
So, but it's going to be great. We're going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, buddy.
So thank you to Wally. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Wally. Thank you to everybody who listens. Thank you to the supporters. It's been so fun to do that stuff for the supporters, the exclusive content. So if you want to become a supporter, go to the Stone Cold and Jackal Facebook page, click the blue button and see a bunch of dummies doing dumb stuff. It is fun. It is fun.
Oh, yeah, that reminds me. I got to start editing some more dummy stuff.
Yeah, perfect.
Got a ton of dummy stuff for you.
Yeah, I love that.
So. All right, guys. We have another great guest next week. We got a couple more weeks of great guests that we know of. Sure. And then I'm sure there's excellent stuff beyond that. But
have some fun beyond that, for sure.
All right, guys. See you next week. Thanks so much.
Have a great week.
If you like our show, you're going to love The Dish with Trish. Join host Trisha Paytas every week as she gives you inside access to all the tea. She'll be doing interviews with fun guests and opening up about relationships, drama, rumors, even some exclusives on her life that you won't get anywhere else. Nothing is off limits when it comes to Trisha's world. So don't miss The Dish with Trish every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.